Welcome everybody to All About Windows Phone Insight podcast number 112, recording this on Thursday, 2nd of October 2014. A few apologies that we're a bit delayed. We missed last week due to logistics, Mr. Rafe Blanford.
That's right. I was taking a short break in Pembrokeshire and didn't quite manage to get the recording done between a combination of that and other factors. But we have got a kind of a bumper episode, quite a bit to talk about, including a brand new device that's just arrived in the office, and Steve's going to be telling us a little bit more about that. Looking forward to hearing about that. But I think we're going to go through a few news items first, aren't we, Steve?
Yeah, I didn't want to go through every one of the stories that happened since we last recorded, Ray, but I did want to cherry pick a few just from the last 2 weeks. Display adapters. Now, at IFA 2014, Nokia released the HD10, a Miracast adapter. You just sit there and you can stream stuff from your Windows phone to HDMI-capable TV. I get that. And then, a few weeks later, Microsoft announced its own, the quote, Microsoft wireless display adapter, ostensibly doing exactly the same thing. Hang on a minute. Isn't Nokia the same as Microsoft? Didn't Microsoft buy a Nokia, this part of Nokia? Why are the two different offices in the same building released the different products?
Well, I suspect they're not in the same building. As we talked about when Microsoft did acquire Nokia, it was going to take a while for kind of the full impact to be measured. And if you think about accessories like that, particularly the Nokia version, which is actually more advanced than the Microsoft version in that it also has kind of a puck that goes with it, and what can be best to be described as a wireless beer mat that you can tap onto the phone and then have it do the whole magically appear mirrored on your TV screen or whatever you've got it plugged into, whereas the Microsoft version is more like the Google Chromecast. It's just a dongle that you add into your TV to make it Miracast capable. So I think they were probably developed at the same time. Those things might be in development for a year or so. So I suspect they were both, you know, ready to release and will release both of them, because actually they've got subtly different uses. The Nokia one, or I guess we should call it the Lumia one really, is really based around pairing it with a phone, whereas the Microsoft is an adapter cable that can be used with a whole range of things. And it's worth bearing in mind that kind of Miracast technology is used in laptops, it's used in tablets, it's also in some PCs, so it's not just phones. Right. So there are a lot of people that might choose to use it without a Lumia device. A lot of TVs already have it built in. It's a really fantastic technology, actually, because you just connect to the Miracast thing, it happens over the Wi-Fi network, and you get your screen mirrored. So you can watch YouTube videos, you can watch Xbox videos or any other content, kind of use your big TV screen as a kind of a browser window or whatever it happens to be. And so I've used it with both the 2520 with a laptop and also obviously with some Lumia phones as well. As I say, most TVs that you buy today over maybe the £500-600 price point will have it built in, but cheaper TVs and obviously existing TVs may not. And so that's where the Microsoft cable comes in. You'd probably opt for the Lumia version, which is going to be a bit more expensive, if you kind of want that kind of seamless sharing experience where you can just tap it onto this puck or this beer mat, and it will automatically do the setup for you. Actually, it works seamlessly. I mean, I saw it in Berlin at the kind of Lumia launch event. It's a really fantastic idea. And even though I've got Miracast built into my TV, I'd be tempted by the accessory just for that ease, because I don't have to switch the inputs. It will just sort of do everything magically. But the Microsoft cable is going to be cheaper, and so it's kind of a case of co-development. But actually, they do have subtly different use cases as well.
Yeah, just all right, one more story then. This is there's a new shiny update, as I put it, for the Windows Phone preview for developers. Now, this is kind of people on the, if you like, the Microsoft Windows Phone beta track, getting all the very latest updates. It's about a monthly schedule for updates. I honestly didn't notice anything different, but if you're going to be on the developers preview program, you might as well be bang up to date. I get the feeling, though, Rafe, I'm guessing you're on the developer preview program on most of your main Windows phones, that most of the remaining issues and problems in terms of everyday experience on Windows Phone is actually down to the application developers not optimizing their applications to work with Windows Phone 8.1. I think the base OS there is probably there now in terms of its basic functionality.
I think that's right. I mean, what the updates we're seeing now are probably going to be what Lumia Denim is based on top of. And we're not really expecting to see big major functional change. It's not like a big version number update. There'll probably be, you know, a few things being fixed and also optimizations going on. But you're right. In that sense, I think actually some of the interest around 8.1 updates now shifts to the third-party applications starting to take advantage of the new API features. And so to bring up one example that's really relevant if you're upgrading or resetting a device, it's, you know, the backup and restore process is now pretty good. You can sign on to Wi-Fi, so it doesn't have to have a SIM card in there. It will download and replace your start screen. It will download the applications. But applications have to specifically sort of save the data into the backup, and most applications aren't set up for that yet, and so you won't get your data restored. And so this is if you're playing a game. It might be the, you know, the levels that you've saved or the progress in the game, or it might be some other bit of application data. I think that sort of thing will come in quite slowly. Even when developers do choose to update, they might not choose to put in that bit of functionality, because a lot of them have done it kind of manually by building in OneDrive functionality for backup or something like that. And there are, of course, then all the APIs around things like calendar, some of the extensions as well. We're starting to see applications, as we predicted, taking advantage of Bluetooth Low Energy. You know, the up band is due to release, or dual band up is due to release a Windows Phone app before too long. I think we'll see more of those. There's probably still some work to do there. There's sort of been some suggestions that Denim may have some updates around sort of notifications that might be relevant for smartwatches, perhaps with, you know, wearables coming either from Microsoft or someone else next year. That'll be worth watching, because obviously that's a pretty hot space. But I think you're right to identify third-party applications as kind of the interesting area. And we've also talked in the past about optimizing for 8.1 in terms of, you know, the startup and also the resuming functionality. So yeah, that's probably a fair summary. So actually, in some ways, the developer previews are now less interesting, I guess worth having because it will fix bugs and probably improve battery life. But for a lot of people, I'd actually say there's kind of, if you're on a Lumia Sign 8.1 device, you probably don't need to worry too much, and it might be good advice to say don't really bother with the developer preview at this point.
One thing that, of course, having said that Windows Phone 8.1 is done, of course, there is fundamental functionality which a lot of people like me have been crying out for. And dare I mention, Ray, you mentioned Bluetooth there, the HID, the human interface device profile, which is common to just about every other mobile OS which can talk to Bluetooth keyboard since 2001, and yet Windows Phone steadfastly refuses to implement for Microsoft this HID profile. Do we have any glimpses whether this might come in a future version?
There hasn't been any comment from Microsoft on this, but I do remember chatting to Steve a little while ago, and he said that one of his HID devices had appeared in one of his devices. So perhaps a hint that it's coming in a future update. We saw something similar actually happen for the Bluetooth Low Energy devices. So I wouldn't be that surprised if it's something that's sneaked into potentially the update that comes with Lumia Denim, or perhaps the one after that. So the idea of being able to use obviously external Bluetooth keyboards is a nice one. And I think it's going to become even more relevant as we move towards Windows 10 or Windows Phone 10 and that sort of thing, because there's going to be this unification with the tablets where, of course, the external Bluetooth keyboards make even more sense. So if it doesn't happen in the kind of current Windows Phone 8 release cycle, it will certainly happen with the next release of the phone version of Windows.
But of course, Bluetooth keyboard did connect to my Windows Phone 8.1 device, but it didn't actually work. It just connected. So as you say, maybe they'll sneak in the working bit in the next update. You also mentioned there Windows 10. Now, this was launched a couple of days ago, obviously for the ostensibly the entire range of Microsoft products and platforms, I guess, but they did show on several of the slides that the Windows 10 running on smartphones. Now, the question is, how much will this affect people running current Windows Phone hardware? For example, we've got Lumia 1520, which is just about as up-to-date and high-spec as you can get in the Windows Phone world. Are we expecting that might get the Windows 10 upgrade sometime middle of next year, or do we think we'll have to buy new hardware for that?
No, I would expect the 1520 and the Snapdragon 800 family, so that's things like the Lumia 930 and also things like the Lumia 630 and 730, the sort of mid-tier devices on the Snapdragon 400 and then the Snapdragon 200, the 530, should all get that update. I mean, Microsoft have basically made a commitment to have the next and one more version for each of those devices. And the 1520 is actually going to benefit. It's going to kind of get both, but it was one of those early ones on the Snapdragon 800. Microsoft, as you said, kind of had their preview announcement for Windows 10, the next version of Windows. It really did concentrate on the tablet and the desktop, as you said. Phone was mentioned in a few slides. I think you could consider Windows 10 in the same way that there was Windows 8 on the desktop and tablet, and then there's Windows Phone 8. I think whether Microsoft chooses to continue calling it Phone or not, you know, whether it's Windows Phone 10 or just gets called Windows 10, is probably a debating point. And of course, they are going to get closer together. I mean, each successive version of Windows Phone has kind of shared more things with the desktop, really starting off with Windows Phone 8 with the shared kernel. With the move to Windows Phone 8.1, you've got universal apps and the idea that you'd share more code. We'll see more of that. I don't think actually we're going to see them merge completely. It's worth watching out for, and it's difficult to be absolute about this because, of course, Microsoft is playing things quite close to its chest. I mean, it has said that universal apps are the way to sort of develop safely, so you'd be able to run on both things. To me, that says there'll be more API unifications, but there's always going to be a UI difference between the sort of sub 7-inch screen devices and above 7-inch screen devices. And then, of course, one of the points about Windows 10 was it kind of made more mode distinctions between things like tablets and then touchscreen laptops and desktops with keyboards. There's plenty of information about it on the web, but kind of the summary of it is that it's really bringing the best of Windows 7 and combining it with Windows 8. I mean, you can see it as a step back or Microsoft retreating from what it was done with Windows 8. It depends which side of the Microsoft commentary fence you fall on, really, how critical or how positive you are about it. I think one of the interesting things was they really played up the enterprise side of it, and that's because a lot of enterprises like Windows 7. But for the phone side of it, I think that's quite interesting because potentially that enterprise sector is something we've previously identified and I continue to believe it's got a lot of potential for Windows Phone in terms of growing, not necessarily becoming the new BlackBerry, but certainly having a very strong play in that enterprise sector. And there's a lot of other things to like in Windows 10 in terms of some of the UI things they've done and the snap views. I think some of that will trickle down to Windows Phone 10 or whatever it chooses to be called. But that's kind of a very long-winded answer to your question about whether you'll see Windows 10 on the kind of existing hardware. Yes, I absolutely think we will. That's one of the reasons they went for the Common Core. And it's obviously going to be a big UI update. And I think we can expect to see further maturity in terms of APIs and feature depth. Just as 8.1 was sort of the catch-up release to some of the things like Android and iOS, I think 10 will continue that. There's clearly still the odd gap, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Microsoft start doing a few innovations of their own, and there'll be a big, big message about the sort of similarities and the unification from PC, laptop, tablet, phone.
Yeah, well, just shown by the image I chose to use in the news story, showing everything from the tiniest phone to the largest desktop. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a strong message. I mean, as a for consumers, there's a lot of, I think, in the techie circles, not a lot of people like Windows 8, but that kind of proposition of a single offering and a single way of doing things across all your devices, I think is quite a powerful one. I'd be interested to hear what you think, Steve, whether that's something you think will appeal to consumers.
I absolutely do. I went to a phone shop just now and I was always interested to see how many Windows phones they have on display. It's currently running at about 10%, which I guess reflects the market share in the UK. But I would hope that as Windows 10 mid-2015 becomes more acceptable and dominant, it starts to be shipped on new PCs across the UK, across Europe, across the world, then people will recognize the phones more and recognize the tablets more, and these things will all feed off each other. So you did mention a UI change. Of course, I don't think there'll be that much of a UI change on the phone. The phone is already running this, the full touch interface, as it were, and you're obviously not going to be able to go back to a desktop or a start button or anything like that. So I don't think Windows 10 will look drastically different on the phone. Obviously, the biggest difference will be the underlying specs and the new hardware that comes along in the intervening months.
I think that's right. I mean, we're talking about refinements to typography and maybe iconography as well, and maybe the introduction of some new elements. I mean, 8.1 we had to pull down for notifications. It's possible that Microsoft will think more about be it task switching or the way notifications are shown. I mean, I think a good bet, for example, would be to have the interactive notifications as we've just seen introduced in iOS 8, and sort of some more innovation on the lock screen and things like that. There's plenty of room for development. In fact, we're going to see some of that come with Lunar Demon. And it's difficult to predict. I mean, as as we said, you know, this Windows 10 event wasn't really about phone, and we can expect to hear more kind of next spring. That's when it's going to come out. We might even see the first devices at MWC next year, although kind of the full release of Windows 10 is expected to be, I think, March, April time rather than sort of earlier in the year. But certainly worth watching, and Microsoft has said in the past that this new release of Windows, they expect it to happen on the same time on sort of desktop PC as on phone or across the whole family of devices.
Yeah. Well, we're certainly rattling through the news stories. Here's another one for you. This is rather major in a way, minor in another. The Bing applications, Windows Phone, and also for Windows itself, and we've been rebranded now under MSN. Now, some people have been very sniffy about this, Rafe, and they said, well, MSN, that's something from the dot-com era 15 years ago. But MSN stands for Microsoft. It's a perfectly fine name and a logical name for all these applications and content that lives under the Microsoft banner. Why not call it MSN and even expand it when necessary to Microsoft networks? It's certainly a lot better than the rather jokey and Steve Ballmer-ish Bing, which I never liked.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think branding and marketing is a complex subject. But to me, it feels like the kind of the right sort of move, in that it's a rationalization rather than, you know, branding for the sake of it, which you could kind of level at Bing. And I don't have any problem with the search engine being referred to as Bing, although I think actually search sort of should really become invisible. And whether you have a brand associated or not, it's kind of interesting. You think about Cortana on certain 8.1 device and whether that could be integrated into browser and desktop. But it's kind of an aside. But of course, also, along with these apps, you know, these apps also exist on Windows 8 on laptops and tablets and PCs. And there's also a big relaunch of the MSN site itself as well. So, you know, that consolidation to me feels like a sensible move. I think for people between the ages of maybe, let's say, 25 and 40, there's kind of an association with the first iteration of MSN and MSN Messenger, some of which can maybe stirs up bad memories. It's sort of the bad old days of the big portals, be it AOL, MSN, Yahoo, CompuServe, all of those from the early days of the internet. And they all had their time. But it's worth remembering that MSN is a brand. It's actually still in, I think it's the top 10 most visited sites in the internet. It doesn't quite compared to the likes of Google and Facebook, but it's still the start page because Internet Explorer is a default browser on a lot of devices out there. So it is a brand that will be familiar to a lot of people. And so it kind of stands for that, to me at least, that generic information. So it fits quite nicely with the idea of sports, news, weather apps, at least in my view. So probably was a smart decision, but I guess you'll always find people critical of those kind of rebranding decisions.
Yeah. This is something that I found very welcome, although given that we missed a week in our podcasting, this stories can be rather belated. But the OneDrive, Microsoft have given anybody who had the photo auto backup turned on set on or were using it during September, which is now finished, of course, and they got an extra 12 gigabytes. Now, the actual figure quoted was 15 gigabytes free, but in actual fact, I think we already had three as a camera roll bonus from sometime last year, so most people ended up with an extra 12 gigabyte. But if you go to your OneDrive application, if you're listening out there, and then click on the account in settings, and then tap on manage storage, you get booted off to the OneDrive website, which breaks down exactly how your OneDrive storage maps out. And you should see there, if you were indeed backing up photos in September, camera roll bonus listed there as 15 gigabytes. So most people hopefully that, Rafe.
Yeah, it's a nice extra to have. I mean, after all, photos, I think, are probably, especially if you've got the automatic upload turn on for the highest or full resolution, can take up a lot of space. I was looking at my OneDrive space the other day, and I now have something like 25 gigabytes of photos stored on OneDrive after, you know, 3 years or so of having them automatically update, or me putting photos up there. I have since added some of my photos from my own from a standalone camera, but that still, you know, feels like several thousand images. I didn't actually go through and do a count or anything like that. And so actually I'm kind of using up all the bonus space. I've actually got a subscription to Office 365, which means I get an extra terabyte of space with that. And so it wasn't desperately needed. But it's surprising how quickly that cloud storage space can fill up. So I think it's generous of Microsoft to sort of do that for free. But it's also a very, very clever move when you consider that you know, Apple is giving, I think, 5 gigabytes of iCloud storage space away for free, but then expects you to start coughing up money. The fact that, you know, you're not having to do a monthly subscription for space on your cloud storage, for most people, I would imagine, is going to be kind of a nice little extra. And it's one more reason, in kind of the tick in the column, that you might buy a Windows Phone device.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, one more story before we hit the hardware part of the podcast. Here Maps, obviously not actually owned by Nokia anymore, has announced plans, certainly in an informal interview, and I think probably officially as well, to bring Android and iOS versions up to Windows Phone's level. Now, the quote that got everyone talking, Rafe, was they said, Sean Fernback said, as a result of the transaction, that's Microsoft buying Nokia, we're having to wind down our Windows Phone app development and shift it over towards Android and iOS, which kind of makes sense. They want to be cross-platform. I think it's the phrase wind down Windows Phone app development. They kind of clarified it later. And the way I understand it, Rafe, is that the Microsoft Windows Phone version of Here Maps, which we've been using now for, 3 or 4 years, is pretty darn mature. There are a few tiny functions that would be nice to have, but it's basically done. And they know what they've got, the Android and iOS versions, which are very, very, very immature, and they obviously need to be brought up to the same level. What I'm hoping will happen is that all three will end up at the same level, and then they can develop all three in tandem. And I think that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, just to be clear here, Nokia does own Here Maps, or Here is one of its divisions.
Right, the old Nokia, as in
indeed,
Microsoft.
Indeed, and it's now, it gets ever so confusing with all these names. It's kind of almost makes you look forward to the Nokia name disappearing off the devices, though not really for us old school people. But you're right. I think there's a couple of important points to make here. The first is Microsoft actually has kind of a special license from Here to not only use the data, which a lot of companies do. You know, it's kind of the most used mapping platform anywhere in the world. It's in 80% of cars and all the other bits of data that Here we'll talk about. But Microsoft actually kind of has a partner license, and it's a bit like the different types of licenses you have for the ARM processors. You can just choose to use the ARM designs, and that's fine. Or you can choose to have a close partnership, in which case companies like Apple will draw on the basis of the ARM design, but will then do their own work on top of it. So Microsoft has a license a bit like that for the Here map. So that means it can integrate it really deeply into the platform. And indeed, that's why Here Maps is the kind of the map platform of choice on Windows Phone and indeed other Windows devices as well. It also means that they can sort of do the full development effort themselves in terms of the application. And when this whole Microsoft-Nokia deal was being mooted, there was a sort of question around, well, who's going to actually do the app development work for Here Maps? At one point, when I talked to the Here people, they said, actually, the app development will be handed off to Microsoft. They'll take that over. It now looks like Microsoft is probably going to get Here to do the development for them. And so we will continue to see updates. But I think quite rightly, Here have said, well, we're not having the same amount of investment. We're going to use some of our developer resources that exist already to kind of look at Android and iOS versions. And they'd be mad not to release an Android and iOS version. You know, they want to become the kind of the cross-platform map player, you know, in the same way that Google Maps is available on other platforms. And actually, they almost have a benefit because they're going to be platform neutral. They're not associated or not owned by one of the manufacturers or one of the platforms now. And so, you know, if they get their cars right, you know, they can sort of make inroads. And I think it's going to be really, really difficult to shift Google Maps because, you know, Google is actually saying as part of the deal now that you have to install certain Google apps if you want to be sort of Google certified Android. So I'm not sure they can get around that. But it's interesting to see that sort of Samsung has been picking up Here Maps and has signed a deal there on things like their watches and potentially elsewhere as well. That's going to be a really interesting one to watch, the whole tension between Google and Samsung. But I think this whole story was a bit of a storm in a teacup, in the sense that, of course, they're going to, you know, wind down Windows Phone development, in the sense it's not going to be their only priority. It will be worth keeping an eye on to see how many updates do come out. And I think people are quite rightly concerned that will this suddenly mean Here Maps on Windows Phone doesn't get actively developed, and what about Here Trans and some of the kind of companion apps that go along with all those Here services? I think Microsoft is wise enough not to sort of just let it stagnate altogether, but it is a relatively mature app, and there isn't anything you immediately go, oh, it needs to have X, Y, and Z. I think you'll always want some people wanting more powerful features, and that's where you probably go to the third-party sat-nav applications, you know, things like Copilot. But for me, actually, the things that probably need improvement and investment as much as anything are the data, you know, the underlying maps. There's always room for improvement there, and particularly with the overhead photos and maybe the introduction of some of the data collected from the very advanced HERE cars, which do 3D mapping based on LiDAR and other technologies. And I wonder whether we'll see that sort of appear at some point, and whether, because they have this special relationship, it might appear on Microsoft first. But until we sort of see real evidence of it sort of being a slowdown, I wouldn't worry too much. And actually, the thing to keep an eye out for is we're going to see much higher quality satellite mapping coming in, because that's something HERE have been working on for a while. I suspect that will probably be the next big update that we see in HERE maps, and that maybe before the end of the year or maybe early next year.
Yeah, well, of course, as Microsoft starts phasing out the name Nokia, then the old Nokia, which has started making tires and boots and so on, which now owns HERE Maps, can actually revert HERE Maps to being called Nokia Maps. Was the Nokia name? Well, it's going to get very confusing. I'm already confused, Rafe.
I think they'll stick with HERE Maps because they've established the HERE brand. And I think there's got a smart side bet that HERE might actually get spun out of Nokia as a separate company. And you know, there's still going to be this issue with Nokia name being associated with phones. And so keeping it with HERE is probably going to keep more of their partners happy. And you know, their business is to be on as many different platforms, as many different map provisions as possible. You know, not just the cars. They want to be in government offices. They want to be in web apps. They want to be in third-party apps, you know, regardless of the device. And so I'd expect it to maintain the HERE name rather than Nokia. But you never know. I might be proved wrong and look stupid in 6 months' time.
Let's move on quickly to hardware before we finish this podcast. We have got the Lumia 735 in for review. This is the single SIM version of the what Microsoft are not accurate calling the selfie phone. I would just say, well, the 830 is due in for review next week, so we'll come to that in next week's podcast, hopefully. Say, Rafe, and I know you handle this at this IFA 2014. I've only had it now for 24 hours, but I'm still knee-deep in the review and hopefully get it out within a few days. Most of it is obviously fairly well-known. It's Windows Phone 8.1 with the sort of Lumia denim tweaks as well. Though a lot of the denim stuff, interestingly, is to do with imaging and the higher-end chipsets. And then much more in the 830 is hardly used at all in the 735. But three things I wanted to talk about on this podcast. First is the build quality, which is tremendous. When I first got it out of the box, I thought, well, this is another, you know, like the Lumia 920 and 95. It's a really nice unibody. Feels great in the hand, the fabulous design. And then there was a sticker on the back saying, this is how you get the back off. And I couldn't believe it. So, and it takes a bit of doing with some strong fingernails, but the back comes off and that's how you put the SIM card in, the micro SD, and how you can change the battery. And then the back snaps on again, and it's like it's a unibody device. It's so solid. It's so integral. That's why Nokia included a sticker. Otherwise, people would have A, not known to take the back off, or B, started jemming it open with a jeweler's screwdriver, for goodness sake. So really, really top-notch build quality and design, I think, from Nokia there.
It is, and I can now tell an embarrassing story. When I was at the launch event for this device, I actually made the assumption that it didn't have a micro SD slot, because I couldn't see where it, you know, fitted in on the outside, and I didn't think it was a removable battery. And it wasn't until one of the demo guys pointing it out to me that you could take the back off that I realized, which is kind of a testament to this unibody not design that Steve is talking about there. And, you know, you don't want to get too wound up in design features, but actually it's a great example of how a company that has kind of this heritage of design and this history of great hardware does something that kind of stands out from everything else on the market, particularly at this price point. You know, you do get other devices with, you know, similar specs and everything else, but it feels like a really solid piece of design, and is, as you say, a continuation of that fabulous design language. And it, for me, it's a shame that it's going to get known as a selfie phone, because I actually think that continuation of that fabulous design language, particularly that price point, and particularly integrating removable battery and micro SD, is a really, really nice thing. And the other thing I want to kind of highlight that I don't think people will realize looking at from the pictures, it's actually a very light device. I'm sadly, all the sort of the fabulous design language has tended to be a bit on the heavy side. You know, you put them on the scales and you go, ooh, it's been eating too many pies. And the 920 was probably the most guilty in that respect. But even so, the 800 and then the N9 for their size were still relatively heavy. You pick up the 735, and particularly when you're, it's partly because it is a smaller device than, you know, the other, you know, big flagships or even other mid-tier devices. But I wonder if that's something you notice. You know, you pick it up off the off the table, and you almost end up throwing it over your shoulder because it's much lighter than you kind of have an expectation of.
I didn't notice the weight so much. I mean, I guess I've got a fairly wide tolerance of foam weights, and I try so many of them. But not a direct result of a build quality, more design, is the fact that I'm just holding up the 735 next to a Samsung Galaxy at the moment in my hand, and they're the same size. And in fact, the Lumia is actually heavier, but the feel in the hand, the 735 feels like a Rolls-Royce compared to a Ford or something. The quality of the finish and every single corner, every single millimeter around the side of the screen, the way the glass curves off, and yet this is not a unibody. You have to keep saying the back comes off and yet it fits together like a unibody.
Yeah, and that's important. I mean, I think you can't make measurements about how long it's going to last without actually sort of living with it for 6 months. But it really does feel like a device that will stand the test of time through, 2 years of ownership, which is something I don't think you can say about a lot of the other mid-tier devices. I mean, I would highlight things like the Motorola G, be that the first or the second edition, and even something like the Motorola E, which, and actually I think the Motorola G is probably kind of the most direct competitor for the 735, particularly once you allow for a bit of launch pricing deflation. And both of those are really good in that respect. And it makes it stand out from a lot of the other mid-tier devices where there's kind of the emphasis on really going for the specifications, kind of max them out as much as possible. And sometimes I think it's the design or the quality, the built to last that gets cut back a little bit too much. And yes, it's a plastic phone. And yes, it doesn't perhaps feel quite so premium. But if you like that kind of plastic design, it's got a nice finish on it. It feels comfortable in the hand because of the rounded edges. The 735 is a real stonker of a mid-tier device. I mean, the 830 is still going to be most people's choice, but it is a more expensive device, and it'd be really interesting to see what happens to the 730, 735's price point, because I reckon that could become kind of the device of choice for people who don't want to spend, the 830 or the 930 price point, because it doesn't have, quite so many compromises as something like the 530. And I do want to talk a little bit about the camera, because I was impressed by that in the 720. Of course it's not a high-end device, but for a mid-tier device, I think it's got a pretty great camera. And I know you went out and took a few experimental shots, so it's too early to give your full assessment, Steve, but camera, yes or no?
Yes, absolutely. I can give it some impressions. I've got all sorts of sample images I've been thumbnailing, ready to put in the review. Quite good results, I have to say. The sensors in both the front and back cameras are on the large size for a device in this price segment. Certainly the front camera is a quarter-inch optical format, which is very large, and 5 megapixel resolution. I have to say the Nokia are becoming past masters at image processing in terms of noise reduction and sharpening. This has really came to light because I was testing the Z3 and Z3 Compact from Sony against some of Nokia's devices this week. And Sony make an absolute pig's ear of the image processing. I mean, so you can tell that it should be better than it is, and yet Samsung are pretty good at image processing and handling, how much do you mess around with the image, the raw image that comes off the sensor before it gets encoded as a JPEG for the user. And I think Nokia, certainly with Lumia Sign and now with Lumia Denim, have really nailed it. Yes, so in summary, images are really quite good. I was impressed for a device in this price segment. People have to look at the sample images and make up their own mind in the review, of course. We should just say that we just had to switch to cellular Skype rather than broadband. We're pushing the limits of technology to bring you the end of this podcast, but I think we're kind of nearly done, Rafe. The review will be up over the next couple of days, and then, of course, got the Lumia 830 to review to look forward to next week. But we're kind of over the half hour, so listen, anything else you want to sort of add? We'll finish there for this week.
Yeah, I think it's a good point to finish. Steve is sounding a bit like he's at the bottom of a very deep hole at the moment as he's coming over 4G, which is kind of appropriate, I guess, if his broadband stopped working, because it does feel a bit like the world's ended and it's sort of gone all dark and all you can see is the stars. But just to reiterate what Steve said there, yeah, the 735, I think, and the 730 really punch above their weight for imaging when you think about the class of device. And it's kind of a trend we've been seeing recently with cameras at the top end, that they've got good enough, and that in a lot of situations they're more than adequate for anything you might want them to do. And I will insert for Steve here a comment about Xenon flash and the ability to freeze shots when people are moving about or in night conditions. What the 735 makes me think is we're continuing on from the 720, which there was a bit of a bigger gap, and I'm not saying the 735 is, you know, right at the top end or anything, but it's kind of introducing that idea of good enough cameras into the mid-tier. And it does make me wonder whether that 735 device then becomes, you know, more attractive as a mid-tier choice for people who don't perhaps want to spend as much as, you know, the top-end devices cost. And it'll be interesting to get Steve's take on the 830 when we have the review of that in due course, because I think that's really going to hit it home. I mean, the 830 probably we talk about as a high-end device, but it's also one that isn't going to be the £500 price point. It's going to be, you know, the 400 and under. Yeah, expecting it to have a really quite good camera. I mean, it has got the PureView brand. It has got the high megapixel count. The sensor size and all that sort of thing, we'll talk about that more in a future podcast. But 735... the one caveat I'd add to all of that is I think at the moment, as with all new devices, there's a bit of a premium on the price. If you wait 3 months, that price is going to come down, and I think it's going to be absolutely stonking value. It's going to be a great device, and it's probably not one that I'd carry around personally, but it's definitely the sort of device that I'd recommend to family members who like their tech but don't necessarily feel they want to spend that much on a phone or don't need the top end, yet who feel a little bit frustrated with the 530 or the 630 type devices. I think 735 and the 830 are going to be really good. And you know, my immediate reaction when seeing both devices was that it feels like Nokia with those, or I should say Lumia, Microsoft, I'm still getting it wrong. I feel that they really nailed those mid-tier devices in a way that they didn't with something like the 820. The 720 was actually pretty close, and then, you know, we didn't see much of the way of follow-up. We saw 625 as kind of a large device, and 520, 620, 530, 630, all really good low-end devices, but there's been something missing in the middle. I now feel they brought that prowess, a really great value, great design from the low-end and put it in the mid-tier, and a really great value there. Still work to do at the high-end, in my opinion, but we'll have to wait and see. And just to give you a little bit of a taster, the 830 to me looks like the device actually I'd probably be willing to carry in place of the 930, just because of some of the extra elements it has, and micro SD and a glance screen. We'll talk about it more when we got it in for review. Steve will be having first dibs on that. I'm rather jealous, but look forward to hearing Steve's opinion. And I think it is a good place to end the podcast, because I don't want to be talking too much, and we probably don't want too much of Steve down a deep hole, but I will just leave it to him to do the traditional sign off.
Thank you. And just to what I did say, three things, the 735, and I don't want to go into detail now on the podcast, but maybe we can cover this next week in detail, is the fact that the 735 and 730 don't have Nokia Glance, despite having an AMOLED screen. So maybe we can investigate and research this, Rafe, and cover it in more detail, because it also applies to 930 and the pros and cons, and when is it, should it be there, shouldn't it be there? Maybe we can cover that in next week's podcast as the main discussion point.
That's a good one, and we'll have Steve talk a bit more about the 735. When he's had a week or so to use it, but hopefully you've got a good flavour after Steve's sort of first 24 hours with the device, and we'll talk on it more, and I will try and get hold of a 735 at some point as well and offer up an opinion too.
Yeah, okay, but in the meantime, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.